expired patents. It's noteworthy that while Dr. Fauci was bemoaning the lack of evidence of HCQ efficacy, he was refusing to commission his own trials to study early use of the hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and Zithromax remedy. Dr. Fauci himself, while spending $48 billion on zero-liability vaccines, at first refused to allocate anything for a randomized placebo study of HCQ. Even worse, he canceled two NIAID-sponsored trials of outpatient HCQ before completion. Dr. Fauci's hypocrisy about HCQ is evident to anyone who looks at his vacillating pronouncements throughout his long career. He has persistently insisted on double-blind, randomized placebo trials for medicines he dislikes, those that compete with his patented remedies, and airily fixed the NIAID study of remdesivir by changing the endpoints midstream to favor the drug. Dr. Fauci did not sponsor or encourage randomized trials for masks, lockdowns, or social distancing. And in the decades since he took over NIAID, he has never demanded randomized studies to confirm safety of the combined 69 vaccine doses currently on the childhood schedule. Every one of these vaccines is regarded as so unavoidably unsafe, in the words of the 1986 Vaccine Act, NCVIA, and the Supreme Court, that their manufacturers have demanded and received immunity from liability. During a 2013 USA Today interview, Dr. Fauci discussed remedies for another deadly coronavirus, MERS, which was causing an outbreak in Qatar and Saudi Arabia with over 30% mortality. Dr. Fauci then sang an entirely different tune than he is singing now about hydroxychloroquine. He suggested using a combination of the antiviral drugs ribavirin and interferon alpha-2b to treat MERS, even though the treatment had never been tested for safety or effectiveness against MERS in humans. In that circumstance, Dr. Fauci's NIAID had found that the treatment could stop MERS virus from reproducing in lab-grown cells. And oh yes, NIAID had patented it. "We don't have to start designing new drugs," Dr. Fauci told journalists. "The next time someone comes into an emergency room in Qatar or Saudi Arabia, you would have drugs that are readily available, and at least you would have some data." Even though the treatment hadn't gone through any trials, Dr. Fauci urged its compassionate use. "If I were a physician in a hospital and someone were dying, rather than do nothing, you can see if these work." He played by all new rules when it came to COVID, forcing doctors to stand on the sidelines while patients died and prohibiting them from trying combinations of repurposed therapeutics to see if these work. Back in 2013, when Dr. Fauci endorsed ribavirin interferon for use against MERS, the two-punch hepatitis C remedy was, according to NIH, horrendously dangerous, with harms occurring in literally every patient who took the concoction. It causes hemolytic anemia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and a retinue of birth defects and/or death of unborn children. Ribavirin is genotoxic, mutagenic, and a potential carcinogen. Nevertheless, in 2013, Dr. Fauci advocated the therapy, despite the total lack of randomized, placebo-controlled clinical trials, in fact, the lack of any human data on using the combination against MERS. The COVID vaccines that qualified for emergency use authorization include novel platforms like mRNA and DNA with no known safety profile. Others use toxic adjuvants like squalene and aluminum, or novel adjuvants with proven risks and potentially high rates of serious injuries. the two-month randomized clinical trials that justified the EUAs for COVID vaccines were far too brief to detect injuries with longer incubation periods. The vaccines are so risky that the insurance industry has refused to underwrite them, and the manufacturers refuse to produce them without blanket immunity from liability. Bill Gates, who is the principal investor in many of these new COVID vaccines, stipulated that their risk is so great that he would not provide them to people unless every government shielded him from lawsuits. Why then should HCQ be the only remedy required to cross this artificially high hurdle? After all, HCQ is less in need of randomized placebo studies than any of these vaccines or remdesivir. The safety of HCQ has been established over more than six decades. While vaccines are given to healthy people who face small risk of catching the disease, HCQ is administered to people who are actually sick, with virtually no risk to the patient. If a drug is safe and might work, if people are dying and there are no other good options, must we not try it? Dr. Fauci's on-again, off-again interest in drug safety is situational and self-interested. He claimed on July 31st about HCQ that, if that randomized placebo-controlled trial shows efficacy, I would be the first to admit it and to promote it, but I have not. So I just have to go with the data. I don't have any horse in the game one way or the other. I just look at the data. In fact, Dr. Fauci always had a stable of horses in the game. One of them is remdesivir. Even after the WHO's randomized placebo trial showed remdesivir ineffective against COVID. Furthermore, remdesivir has a catastrophic safety profile. His second nag is the Moderna vaccine, in which he invested years and $6 billion taxpayer dollars. He was thrilled to sponsor a human trial of a Moderna COVID vaccine, partly owned by his agency, before there were any safety and efficacy data from animal studies, which goes against FDA regulations. He then pushed for hundreds of millions of people to get EUA vaccines before the randomized placebo-controlled trials were complete. So much for Dr. Fauci's requirement for having high-quality evidence before risking use of drugs and vaccines in humans. Dr. Fauci's ethical flip-flopping about the need for rigid safety testing is particularly troubling, since he is championing a competitive product from which his agency and his employees expect a lucrative financial outcome. In the midst of a pandemic, with hundreds of thousands of deaths attributed to COVID, and the economy in free fall, Dr. Fauci's suggestion that we withhold promising treatments that have an established safety profile from patients who have a potentially lethal disease, pending the completion of randomized controlled clinical trials, is highly manipulative and utterly unethical. It is not medically ethical to allow a COVID-19 patient to deteriorate in the early stages of the infection when there is an inexpensive, safe, and demonstrably effective HCQ treatment that CDC's and NIAID's own studies show blocks coronavirus replication. It would be equally unethical to enroll sick individuals in such studies, as Dr. Fauci proposes, in which half the infected patients would receive a placebo. Dr. Fauci's hypocrisy is particularly acute since the 21st Century Cures Act, which Congress passed in 2016, directs the FDA to accept precisely the type of real-world evidence reported by treating physicians like Drs. Zelenko, Raoult, Riche, Corey, McCullough, Gold, and Chinese doctors in lieu of controlled clinical trials for licensing new products. The Cures Act recognizes that doctors and scientists can obtain very useful information when treating patients and observing the results outside of a formal trial setting. For Big Pharma, no milestone was more important during the current pandemic than neutralizing HCQ to prevent its widespread beneficial use. Dr. Fauci's shocking inconsistency and ethical breaches are congruent with his long history of promoting Big Pharma's more profitable patented products and using his power and influence to advance its agenda without regard to public health. Dr. Fauci's leadership role in this deadly scandal is consistent with his long history of discrediting therapies that compete with vaccines and other patented pharmaceutical products. Thanks to Dr. Fauci's strategic campaign, most Americans are still unable to obtain HCQ for early treatment of COVID-19. Even fewer Americans are able to access it as preventive medicine, and fewer still are aware of its benefits. His bizarre and inexplicable actions give credence to the suspicions held by many Americans that Dr. Fauci is working to prolong the epidemic in order to impose expensive patented drugs and vaccines on a captive population during a pandemic that has crashed the world economy, caused famines, and destroyed lives. While Dr. Fauci held us hostage waiting for what turned out to be imperfect vaccines, his own agency attributed over 500,000 deaths in America to COVID. Professor Risch believes that Dr. Fauci knowingly lied about the drugs hydroxychloroquine and used his influence to get the FDA to suppress it because he and other bureaucrats are in bed with other forces that are causing them to make decisions that are not based on the science and are killing Americans. Moreover, Dr. Risch specifically claims that Fauci and the FDA have caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans who could have been saved by HCQ. 3. Ivermectin. By the summer of 2020, frontline physicians had discovered another COVID remedy that equaled HCQ in its staggering, life-saving efficacy. 5 years earlier, two Merck scientists won the Nobel Prize for developing ivermectin, IVM, a drug with unprecedented firepower against a wide range of human parasites, including roundworm, hookworm, river blindness, and lymphatic filariasis. That salute was the Nobel Committee's only award to an infectious disease medication in 60 years. FDA approved IVM as safe and effective for human use in 1996. WHO includes IVM, along with HCQ, on its inventory of essential medicines, its list of remedies so necessary, safe, efficacious, and affordable that WHO deems easy access to them as essential to satisfy the priority healthcare needs of the population. WHO has recommended administering ivermectin to entire populations to treat people who might have parasitic infections, meaning they consider it safe enough to give to people who haven't even been diagnosed. Millions of people have consumed billions of IVM doses as an anti-parasitic with minimal side effects. Ivermectin's package insert suggests that it is at least as safe as the most popular over-the-counter medications, including Tylenol and aspirin. Researchers at Japan's Kitasato Institute published a 2011 paper describing IVM in terms almost never used for any other drug. There are few drugs that can seriously lay claim to the title of wonder drug, penicillin and aspirin being two that have perhaps had greatest beneficial impact on the health and well-being of mankind. But ivermectin can also be considered alongside those worthy contenders based on its versatility, safety, and the beneficial impact that it has had and continues to have worldwide, especially on hundreds of millions of the world's poorest people. Three statues at the Carter Center, at the headquarters of the World Bank, and at the headquarters of the World Health Organization honor the development of ivermectin. Because since 2012, multiple in vitro studies have demonstrated that IVM inhibits the replication of a wide range of viruses. Nature magazine published a 2020 study reviewing 50 years of research, finding IVM highly effective against microorganisms, including some viruses, and reporting the results in animal studies demonstrating antiviral effects of ivermectin in viruses such as Zika, dengue, yellow fever, West Nile. An April 3, 2020 article entitled "Lab Experiments Show Antiparasitic Drug Ivermectin Eliminates SARS-CoV-2 in Cells in 48 Hours" by Australian researchers at Monash and Melbourne Universities and the Royal Melbourne Hospital first won IVM global attention as a potential treatment for COVID. The international press initially raved that this safe, inexpensive, well-known, and readily available drug had demolished SARS-CoV-2 in cell cultures. We found that even a single dose could essentially remove all viral RNA by 48 hours, and that even at 24 hours there was a really significant reduction in it, said lead researcher Dr. Kylie Wagstaff. Based on this study, on May 8, 2020, Peru, then under siege by a crushing COVID endemic, adopted ivermectin in its national guidelines. Peruvian doctors already knew the medicine, widely prescribed it for parasites, and health authorities knew it was safe and were comfortable with it, recalls Dr. Pierre Corey. COVID deaths dropped precipitously, by 14-fold, in the regions where the Peruvian government effectively distributed ivermectin. Reductions in deaths correlated with the extent of IVM distributions in all 25 states. In December 2020, Peru's new president, under pressure from WHO, severely restricted IVM availability, and COVID cases rebounded with deaths increasing 13-fold. In prophylaxis studies, ivermectin repeatedly demonstrated far greater efficacy against COVID than vaccines at a fraction of the cost. In Argentina, for example, in the summer of 2020, Dr. Hector Carvalho conducted a randomized placebo-controlled trial of ivermectin as a preventative, finding 100% efficacy against COVID. Carvalho's team found no infections among the 788 workers who took weekly ivermectin prophylaxis, whereas 58% of the 407 controls had become ill with COVID-19. A later observational study from Bangladesh, also investigating ivermectin as a pre-exposure prophylaxis against COVID-19 among healthcare workers, found nearly as spectacular results. Only 4 of the 58 volunteers who took a minimal dose of ivermectin, 12 milligrams once per month for 4 months, developed mild COVID-19 symptoms, compared to 44 of the 60 healthcare workers who had declined the medication. Furthermore, a 2021 study suggested that a key biological mechanism of IVM, competitive binding with SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, was not specific to any coronavirus variant, and therefore, unlike vaccines, ivermectin would probably be effective against all future variants. As early as March 1, 2020, some frontline ICU and ER doctors began using ivermectin in combination with HCQ in early treatment protocols. Dr. Jean-Jacques Ryder, a Belgian physician working in Miami, began using the drug March 15th and immediately saw an uptick in recoveries. He published an excellent paper on June 9th. Meanwhile, two Western physicians using ivermectin in Bangladesh also reported a very high rate of recoveries, even among patients in later states of illness. Since March 2020, when doctors first used IVM against COVID-19, more than 20 randomized clinical trials, RCTs, have confirmed its miraculous efficacy against COVID for both inpatient and outpatient treatment. Six of seven meta-analyses of IVM treatment RCTs completed in 2021 found notable reductions in COVID-19 mortality. The relevant studies all showed significant benefit for high-risk outpatients, says the eminent Yale epidemiologist Dr. Harvey Riesch. The only studies where its performance was anything short of stellar were those that investigated its efficacy in patients in very late stages of COVID. But even late-stage patients showed benefits in almost all studies, although somewhat less dramatic. According to a 2020 review by McCullough et al., numerous clinical studies, including peer-reviewed randomized controlled trials, showed large magnitude benefits of ivermectin in prophylaxis, early treatment, and also in late-stage disease management. Taken together, dozens of clinical trials that have now emerged from around the world are substantial enough to reliably assess clinical efficacy and infer a signal of benefit with acceptable safety. Early in January 2021, Dr. David Chesler, a geriatric specialist who had treated 191 infected patients since the previous spring at seven Virginia nursing homes, wrote to Dr. Fauci, claiming that he had achieved a mortality rate of 8% using ivermectin, half and 146,000 deaths less than the U.S. average in elder care facilities. In his letter to Dr. Fauci, Chesler attached a peer-reviewed case study documenting reports of similar efficacy from other countries. Neither Dr. Fauci nor anyone else from NIAID replied to Dr. Chesler's letter. The Annals of Dermatology and Venereology reported that in a French nursing home, all 69 residents, average age 90, and 52 staff survived a COVID-19 outbreak. As it turns out, they had all taken ivermectin for a scabies infestation. COVID decimated the surrounding community, but only seven elder home residents and four staff were affected, and all